Welcome to the Saints Happy Hour Podcast with host Ralph Malbro and featuring bloggers Andrew Juge of SaintsNation.com, Kevin Held of The Team Drops the Ball, and Dave Cariello of Canal Street Chronicles. This podcast is nothing but serious football talk and hardcore analysis.
Which four of you would survive the longest in the zombie apocalypse, and in which order would you die?
Well, Ralph, no offense, you're going first.
Oh, definitely. No.
The zombies would smell Dave's sugar blood and target him.
They'd get his...
I don't even have a joke, Dave smells like nougat.
Now here's your host, Ralph Malbro.
All right, welcome to the Saints Happy Hour Podcast. As always, we are sponsored by you, the fan. Donate. We need to keep the lights on. We're going to have a drunk history. Me and Andrew, we promise we'll get that out to you before the end of October. Pinky swear. Before we get to Dave and hopefully Kevin's triumphant return, because Adrian Peterson is no longer collecting a paycheck from the Saints, so Kevin is back. He says it. He's a man of his words. He's coming back from the Swiss Alps or wherever he was hiking from. He's going to be back.
And in the ultimate twist of irony, Adrian Peterson's kind of back too.
Yeah, Adrian Peterson leaves the Saints and goes off. But before we get to that, we have a very special guest who is a big fan of the podcast, and Andrew was telling me about him, and I was like, we got to have him on. He's Jim Gleason. He is an actor, and Jim, I'm not going to lie, when Andrew said, oh, he's an actor, he's a big fan, I was like, oh yeah, whatever, he probably did like one role in like some dinner theater in Orlando. Then I pulled up your IMDb page, and I was like, damn, this dude's got like 73 credits. I mean, you're doing like real stuff, and like A Halt, Catch Fire. I mean, some of the, like these are my like favorite shows. So before we get into the Saints, like how long you been doing this, and when did it become like a thing where you're like, I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna be an actor, and I'm gonna make money doing this.
Well, like our friend Dave Cariello, I went to Tulane and I studied theater there from 82 to 86. And yes, there. You youngsters, there was an 82 to 86 where people were adults. So when I finished college, I just knew that's what I wanted to do. And I knocked around New Orleans for about 10 years when there really was not a film and television industry, and did quite well for a small market. First ever scene in anything really legit was with Dennis Hopper, which was kind of cool.
Nice.
And then and I worked with Robert Duvall. And then end of 97, I decided to screw it all up and go to Los Angeles, and stayed out there for about 14 years working primarily in episodic TV. And then 2010, I was home for Christmas, and I was home. I'm from Mandeville. I'm a Mandeville kid. So I was home for an event, and I met this girl, and we locked eyes, and it was just like the movies. That was it. It was it for her. It was it for me. We did long distance for about a year, and I moved home in 2012 because the film and television industry here was just booming, and I was teaching out there as well. So I teach actors here now how to audition and act for the camera.
Yeah, I have to say, you like American Horror Story is one of me and my wife's favorites. We're trying to plug them.
My wife.
No. But one of my favorite TV shows, and. It is a horrible TV show, but I love it. It's Franklin and Bash. It's so terrible, but I love it. And I saw that you were on that in 2011. I was like, yes. I
was. My scene was with Malcolm McDowell, who was really super cool. I had met him 12 years prior in New Orleans at the airport. I was at the airport to pick somebody up, and who's standing there but Malcolm McDowell? And I'm that dork that'll go up and talk to anybody, right? So I go up and introduce myself, and he was really super cordial and super British, and he was really nice. So when we did our scene together between setups, I started chatting with him, and I said, hey, we met 12 years ago. And he, of course, had no recollection. And we started talking, British invasion music. And he was from Liverpool, and his father owned a pub, and he used to duck into clubs and go see the Silver Beatles before they dropped the silver off the front of their name.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
that's cool. You know, and
it was super cool.
And you're like all these shows, like Numbers, which was a good show. I'm nostalgic for it because it was one of my dad's favorite. Like my dad loved like this, all this. He only watched CBS, so he loved like NCIS and Numbers and the Rockford Files, which my wife just cannot stand. She's like, "Why are you watching that?" I'm like, "It's the Rockford Files." My dad liked the Rockford Files. Yes, it's on Channel 54 in Houston, and I love it. And I will like the theme song. I just like play it over and over again.
But, and Angel's cool, isn't he?
Yeah.
Angel on the show?
Yeah. So I mean, it's like you know. So what? I mean, what is an experience on a TV show that you did and you were like, "This is just the this is like the pin this is like the pinnacle of like everything I dreamed of when I was a kid."
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. I've had a lot. I've been really blessed. I'm a little spiritual, so God, I believe in God, and I believe that God has really, really blessed me. And I've had great experiences with a lot of people that I've always sort of looked up to and had a chance to meet and work with. But the one I was kind of most proud of was I played a trauma surgeon on Grey's Anatomy. It was right after their first season, so they were a big hit. And I went and auditioned for this role of this trauma surgeon. I'm supposed to be operating on this patient. I'm arguing with Isaiah Washington's character, Burke. So I did the audition, and it went well, and I booked the role. When I get there, and of course, you have two scenes. One is simple, and one is the most complex thing in the world. And of course, the first day, you're the first scene, and it's the most complicated scene in the whole shoot. Instead of like getting to work gradually into it, they throw you right into the fire. So they have this mock patient set up and this little cutout where they have like a little calf's liver stuck in there. And across the table from me are two actual nurses who are playing nurses, and they're telling me how I have to receive instruments so that it looks legit. So I was not prepared for that at all. So I get in there and I'm like, holy smokes, I gotta remember all this technical jargon, and I gotta remember all my lines, and I gotta argue with Isaiah Washington and operate and look like I know what I'm doing. And we did the little sort of rehearsal. Now on a television set, when they say let's rehearse, it has nothing to do with the actors. It's all for like, where's the camera gonna go and where are you gonna be standing? That's all the rehearsal is, quote unquote, is to them. So we did the rehearsal and I went back to get ready, and I was like, oh my God, I can't screw this up. And I did super well. I was surprised at myself. So I said, this is pretty boss.
So awesome. That is awesome. And now people are like, people are probably like, this is cool. I don't care. This podcast is for me. I'm enjoying this. But people are probably like, get to the Saints. And the Saints
I want to say real quick, Jim, I mean, this in the middle of all this, you know, Saints Nation started in 2007, 2008.
Oh, yeah.
And that's when I started my blog, and Jim was one of the very first people to, like...
Besides your friends and family?
Yeah, to, like, be reading the articles, commenting on them, emailing me, and kind of having a back and forth, which is the whole reason I started the whole thing, was just to have... I live in Virginia. There's no Saints fans here. There's just not a ton of them, and it was an outlet for me to talk Saints with fans, and so... You know, anyway, it's awesome. It's so cool to have him on the podcast now.
And
it's
Jim, my pleasure. Like, what's your first like Saints memory? Your first like Saints memory that you have in your life?
My first Saints memory is walking across, is getting off the streetcar, and walking across the Tulane campus to the old Tulane Stadium, and sitting in the aluminum bleachers, and kicking the aluminum bleachers and making noise, and my dad getting all pissed at the refs and screaming. And you get a box of popcorn that was shaped, I don't know how to explain it. It had four sides, and from the bottom, it flared out to the top. And on the side, it said, "Go Saints, go." And when you finish your popcorn, it was perforated so you could tear out the bottom of the box. And it then became a megaphone. And as kids, my brother and I used to go, "Go awesome. Saints, go," through the megaphone.
My father had Saints season tickets, like really good seats. It was $100 for 11 games, because back in 67, they played six preseason games. They did that for a long time because the players, they didn't really do an offseason. They needed time to get in shape, you know?
Yeah.
My first Saints memory is Walter Payton breaking the rushing record of Jim Brown. They stopped. Yeah. They stopped the game in 83, I think. Uh-huh. They stopped the game. That's my first Saints memory watching on TV. But you're a diehard fan. And last question before we get to the actual game, like, the interesting thing I always find about Saints fans, Jim, is when you meet them, I rarely meet a Saints fan that isn't connected to the to New Orleans in some kind of way. I know it's different now a little bit because they've been winning the last 10 years, and it's a few of them that...
Oh, it's the international brand now.
Yeah, it's international brand. But, like, most Saints fans, they have to be connected to New Orleans in some way. I remember when I lived in California, if I was wearing my Saints stuff and I bumped into somebody, like, and I would chat with them, it wasn't like, yeah, I just dig the Saints and I'm from Idaho. Like, it was always like, I'm from Chalmette and, you know, like...
I'll tell you what, though, you know, every Sunday we used to meet at the sports bar, and there were a couple of people, more than one, that were like, I don't know, as a kid I had a choice. My dad said, you can either have a Giants jersey or a Saints jersey. Pick the Saints jersey. Or one guy said, it was just a couple of people that were stories like that.
Yeah.
Where it was either a hat or a jersey or something like that, or they just locked onto the Saints.
Yeah.
So, but for the most part, I'm from Chalmette, or I'm from Mississippi, and we know we're about an hour outside of New Orleans, so that kind of thing.
So the Saints are 3-2. How much of panic did you have today during this game? I had a lot of. I'm not gonna lie. I had a mini meltdown when it got to 45-38. I will not lie.
Well, whenever the Saints go up. Or any team in the NFL, whenever they go up like 35 points in the first half, get ready for the upset. It's just the way it goes. I mean, you may not remember this. There was a Monday Night Football when the Saints were on, and I think they were playing the Raiders.
They were.
And Chuck Muncy was the running back. I remember Chuck Muncy just like running up into the camera and putting his face off in the camera at halftime, and then they lost that game.
They were up 30. They were up 28-7.
Something ridiculous.
Yeah.
And so anytime the Saints go up real fast, I'm like, oh, Lord. Because you get complacent. And do what they did today. They play conservative. They keep handing the ball off. They get 2 yards and they punt. And that's just – it's just a recipe for a screw-up. You know what I mean?
Andrew, I mentally checked out. I mean, I was checking in on Atlanta as they were coughing up the lead to the Dolphins. I was mentally checked out. Like, it got to be 45-10. I'm, like, peeking over at the Dolphins. My wife is on the couch sleeping.
My wife.
So, I mean, you know. So, did you kind of mentally – I mean, when it got to be 45-10
– Oh, I actually was texting with Jim during the game, and I think at one point I just texted, they're going to lose. They're done.
Yeah.
What did I say, Andrew?
Let me look back here. You said something like,
I can tell you. I said, how dare you?
How dare you?
Don't lie. You were thinking it too. I was nervous. I think the thing that was tough, man, is that it literally the only way they could lose was to do things like give up a long touchdown, one-handed catch.
Turnovers.
Give up a long touchdown up the seam on 3rd and 17.
Check.
Give up a punt return for a touchdown.
Check.
Right.
Throw a pick six from the one.
Turn the ball over
two other times.
It was a how-to. It was a how-to guide of how to cough
like,
up a
35. Don't get
point
a first
lead.
Down for the whole half.
Yeah, it was a, and that's right. The thing. Like it was going like, and then like when Detroit got it, even though they were 99 yards away, I was like. I said on Twitter, I was like, we all know how this is going to go. And then
Cam Jordan catches it.
And, I mean.
Andrew, tell him what else I said about Detroit.
You said that Detroit's used to doing this.
Yeah.
Kind of coming back.
They're going to play well enough to lose.
That's right. And that's what they did.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, the Saints, if they would have had just, like, one clock, even if they wouldn't have scored, if it would have been, like, 45-17, and they'd have had a drive where they drive 6 minutes and punted, like, Detroit would have thrown the white flag because Stafford was beat up. But it just kept going and going. I mean,
Here's the thing for me in this game. Yeah, I said on the last podcast that I predicted a Saints blowout win.
You did.
And up until 45-10, that was kind of how I was expecting it.
It
kind of
went
go.
Like I said, though. I said it was going to be a blowout, but that Detroit would make it close and it would get, and then Saints would wrap it up. So I was.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was.
So it's funny because I made a comment that I think the offense is only going to get better because they're going to get Adrian Peterson out of the mix.
Yep.
And it's going to allow them to kind of unlock the offense and not force the ball to him, not square peg, round hole it, but just kind of focus on the matchups and how they can attack a defense. And I thought, especially in the first half, when you look at how they got Hooman involved and how they got Ted Ginn isolated on the safety, and they weren't involving Mike Thomas at all, and it didn't matter. I mean, Willie Snead wasn't touching the ball much. Kobe Fleener had no role in this game, and they were still able to expose them. And so, you know, it just became a lot more about the game plan and a lot less about, you know, I got to keep Adrian Peterson happy.
I'm going to tell you two things that one will make me look like a fantasy genius. The other one will make me look like the worst fantasy player ever, which I am. I started Ted Ginn out of desperation because I had injuries and bye weeks. So I started Ted Ginn. That was good. Bad. I cut Adrian Peterson on Monday before the Saints traded him, and I picked up Atlanta's defense to play Miami.
Oh.
Ouch.
Yeah.
But the really weird thing about this is in the second half, when the Saints were up 45-10 and all they had to do was milk the clock, that's when I started thinking, man, I really wish they had Adrian Peterson here. And it was one of those things where you can commit to the run every play, and you don't really care if the guy – you trust him enough because he's a veteran and you know he's a power back that's going to run in between the tackles. But if he gets hurt – you kind of don't care because he's not one of your two bell cows.
Right.
So the ultimate twist of just like, oh man, like I just had that moment where I was just like, even before I saw how well he was doing, I was like, it's kind of funny how this worked out, because this is the one time through five games this season where I could see Adrian Peterson getting 15 carries and us actually needing him.
Right. Here's look at it this way. Peterson had like over 100 yards today, and everyone's being like, why did the Saints get rid of him? He would be so great. Between the two of the running backs that we had almost 200 yards. So yeah. What do you want, 100 yards or 200 yards? Which you prefer? And I think they know how to use those guys. So I can see what you're saying, Andrew. I get it. But they've got what's 33?
They should have run him today, because here's the thing: like Adrian Peterson fumbles a lot anyway. So
right.
I know you say you trust him, but they could have like to if you're not going to mix in Edmonds today, like you're never going to mix.
Peterson fumbled today, by the way.
What's that?
Peterson fumbled.
Yeah,
today,
that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, but if the Saints aren't ever going to mix in Edmonds today, they're never going to get. He's never getting a carry, dude.
Well, he's the insurance. You know what I mean?
But I guess, Jim, I look at this team, like, and, you know, I'll admit freely, like, when they were 0-2, I was like, I wasn't saying that they were going to be a disaster and be like 4-12, but I was like, it's 7-9 again, redux. But I look at the NFC and I'm like, who's better than the Saints?
Not too many.
You know?
You could argue that Washington is a similar team. You could argue that the Rams could put it together. Atlanta, I can't. They lucked out last year. Green Bay obviously is out. Detroit is beat up. We beat them up today pretty badly. You know what I mean? Tampa Bay. By the running quarterback in the NFL is a complete myth designed to sell jerseys. It's never going to win a Super Bowl ever. Can we all just put that to bed?
Amen.
Probably. Do you know what I mean?
No running quarterback is. Well, Steve Young, kind of.
He's not a running quarterback. He's not gonna pull the ball down and make plays with his legs, you know, every seventh play. He only does that in times of desperation. He did it well.
Yeah.
You know?
Andrew, Atlanta's kind of a mess, man. Their fans were melting down, you look at the Saints and they're 3-2 and they are like exactly where they're supposed to be. Like there's no like luck or any like their three wins are solid wins. Their two losses, they got their ass handed to them, and they're 3-2. Right? You look at Atlanta, they're 3-2, but they could be 1-4 easily. Mm-hmm. You know.
You know, I just think it. You look at the Falcons last year, and just a lot of things went their way. They were the only team in the NFL that had all five offensive linemen the whole year, and that's a big deal. Mm-hmm. And I think you look at Julio Jones, he's a little banged up this year. They had the number one sack guy in the league last year. And this year, I'm looking at their box score against the Dolphins. They did not have one sack today. And, you know, against that line, you miss
at home?
Easily, and you're not hitting Jay Cutler.
At home.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, you know, without Beasley, all of a sudden their pass rush is a big question mark. You know, Matt Ryan they lost their offensive coordinator, right? He was kind of the design guy. So, you know, now they've got a new guy, and I'm looking at Matt Ryan's stats for the year, and I think he's got 5 touchdowns and 5 picks. So, you know, he's not putting up his over 100 QB rating.
The Ralph Fantasy Stink is alive and well. I have him. And he's my starting quarterback, and he is terrible.
Keep starting him.
I have him. I have Hooper, their tight end. I have their running backs. Like, my fantasy team is a disaster. And I did it for you, Saints fans. I should get like a Purple Heart of fantasy for like doing that for Saints Nation or whatever you want to say. Like,
Ralph, you totally threw yourself on a fantasy grenade for us.
Did.
I appreciate it.
I and you know what? I wanted to trade for Julio Jones, and I offered the guy in the podcast league a ridiculous trade offer, and he refused because I wanted to have Ryan, Coleman, Julio, Hooper, the Matt Bryant and Atlanta's defense. That's what I wanted, and he refused. Like, I think I offered him Michael Thomas and like 2 other running backs, and he turned me down. I was very disappointed. So Jim, like, what, before we get to like a preview for your predictions for the Saints the rest of the year, like, what do you have, anything like really cool acting wise that's coming up for you that we should be on the lookout for?
You know, actually, at the end of the last year, I worked on 4 different feature films. 2 of them are sort of like, one of them was kind of like Mad Max. They're all set in sort of the near distant future. One was kind of a Mad Max-esque thing where I play sort of a normal guy. And then the other was this like farm technology conspiracy theorist thing. It sounds weird, but it's really kind of cool. But there were 2 other movies. One was a remake of the movie Benji. And I play like the police detective captain. And then the other was a football movie about a player who played for Ole Miss. His name was Chucky Mullins.
Oh,
are you guys familiar with
him? Yeah, Chucky Mullins. He's a big, my whole family went to Ole Miss. Chucky Mullins.
Okay.
He's huge. My brother actually went, my brother was at Ole Miss when he played against Vanderbilt and collided and got paralyzed.
Well, I play the dad of Brad Gaines, who was
for Vandy. Yeah.
Yeah. So that, I don't know when that's coming out, but I'm pretty happy about that. That was a nice shoot. That's a nice role too. So
yeah, that'll be a really interesting movie. I mean, he's beloved at Ole Miss.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it's called It's Time, which is kind of their motto. Oh, speaking of mottos, did you guys see the NFL films Football Life about Sam Mills?
I did.
Yes.
I did, and I taped it.
It's amazing.
It's pretty great,
dude. And that's the thing. Robertson almost pulled off the Sam Mills today, taking the ball right out of Matt Stafford's hand and running for a touchdown. Sam Mills actually did it to Browning Nagel in 92.
Yeah.
Can we talk about that for a second? Like, why has Craig Robertson not been playing this year?
I don't know. Yeah. The Saints' 2 moves on defense that kind of have jump-started their defense is Crawley and Robertson, and they didn't even want to do it. Like, they had to be shamed and forced into it. You know?
Yeah. Well, I want to take up a point of issue with the Juge, if I may.
Bring it on.
At the during preseason, you were like, I don't know about our linebackers. And I was like, dude, you don't understand. This is the Saints. This is Peyton's MO. He gets these guys that are just behind the starters on other teams, and he brings them in, and they do well. He did it with Fujita. He did it with Shanley. He did it, you know, he had a bunch of no names, except for when they plugged in Vilma.
Yeah.
So and so now they've got some legit players at linebacker. And, you know, that last year Robertson was, I think, their best linebacker. And this year he's not, but he's very good. So they've really upgraded that position. That's why they stopped the run so well.
Yeah, I think the thing with Robertson, he's the new Shanley in that the fans hate him. The fans hate him. The coaching staff wants to replace him. But all he does is be slightly above adequate. And keep his job.
Always in position. He's always around the ball, and he's always kind of making plays. Now, every once in a while, he'll get beat. Everybody gets beat a little bit. Yeah. Come on. Give him a break.
That's the thing. I think, you know, some people say, I think Robertson, maybe his biggest thing is he struggles when coverage gets behind him. You know, and we saw that on the 3rd-and-17 seam throw to the tight end where they scored. So I think he struggles there, and he's not the fastest guy. But, I mean, give me a guy like that any day over a guy like Stephon Anthony, who has all the measurables, all the skills, everything you would ever need to be successful at linebacker. But mentally, they just don't have the instincts, and their head is just swimming when they're out there. Mm-hmm. Robertson reads and reacts, and most of the time he gets to the ball and he makes the play. And I would rather have guys like that in the game.
Yeah, he is a player – because you're not going to have 11 Pro Bowl guys in your defense. He's a guy that's really good. And it just goes to show you, Jim, Cleveland, they don't know what they're doing. Like, Cleveland got rid of him, and the Saints got him for some. And I just saw that Cleveland is like, they're like not even a year and a half into their grand experiment. The owner already wants to blow it up. Cleveland's never winning a football game ever again.
Can I just say how, guys, do you understand how amazingly talented our rookie class is? It is astonishing. We got Lattimore, we got Ranchick, we got Kamara, obviously, we got Marcus Williams, and I think Marcus Williams is a little underrated. He's still learning on the job, but I remember last game, or maybe it was the game before, the receiver went out and he caught the pass in the flat, and he started to go down the sideline. Marcus Williams comes up and takes that sideline angle away. How many times have we seen a Saints safety come up, Jairus Byrd, and take the wrong angle, and the dude scores a touchdown? He forced the dude back inside, did his job. He's a smart, talented kid. And then you got Hendrickson, who was making plays today. Anzalone, who was, like, really coming on before he got injured, which is a shame. This is an amazing draft class.
It's as good as 2006.
This feels like 2006.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the shame of it is, like, all they needed to do was have, like, one other draft class this good between 2006 and 2017, and they'd have had like three more playoff appearances,
right?
Because they had Drew Brees. Like, that's all. Like to turn the needle back and be a, like, probably, I think they're going to be a playoff team this year because the NFC is terrible. But like, that's all. Like, that's all it took. Andrew was like, one good, like a lot of teams have to stack draft after draft after draft because they, like Jacksonville, they have everything but a quarterback. The Saints, they had Drew Brees. All it took is basically a pretty good draft in 16 and an awesome draft in 17, and they're right back in it.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Jim, like, what do you see the rest of the year?
Well, I have my handy dandy schedule right in front of me. We go to Green Bay.
Five games, they're all winnable in my opinion.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Green Bay, if Rodgers isn't playing, I mean, how can you not win that game?
Well, that game is interesting, and we'll talk about it when we talk to Dave and Kevin, is that it's not just Rodgers that's gone. They might be without both of their offensive tackles.
Right. Chicago in the Dome, come on. Tampa Bay, Jameis Winston's beat up, come on. At Buffalo, Tyrod Taylor, really? Washington in the Dome, that's going to be a good game. At LA Rams, we'll have to play well to beat them there. Although LA doesn't really have a fan base yet.
Yeah.
In Carolina in the Dome, that's a sneaky one because we beat them pretty handily in their place, and we know we can get to Cam Newton, but are we going to be complacent? Are we going to walk into that going, we got this? Yeah. Because when you do that, you're not going to win. At Atlanta, I think we could win that one. Jets at home, absolutely. Atlanta at the Dome. If we lose in Atlanta, we'll beat them in the Dome. And at Tampa Bay, I just don't think Tampa Bay is that good. So I'm such an optimist. It's ridiculous. But I think we could win. We could lose two. We could go 11-4.
11-4. 11. I still think they're gonna.
That schedule and you. I mean, 10-6 gets you in the playoffs. And to me, now that they're 3-2. I was telling you, Ralph, that this game is a must-win because they can't go into Green Bay. At the time, I was thinking Rodgers was going to play, but I was telling you they can't go into Green Bay at 2-3. So they got the must-win. You look at the schedule. I mean, 10-6 for me now, it's attainable.
Yeah,
like this season is officially. I'm ready to sound the bell here. This season is officially exciting.
I said 11-4. I meant 12-4.
12-4. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, you know, you got to see too. They're gonna have some injury bumps, and it just depends on where. Yeah. You know, it just depends on where it hits you. The older I get, guys, the more I'm thinking the NFL. It just like it's a lot about skill and coaching and drafting all that. But a lot of it, man, is injury luck and catching teams at the right time. Like they caught Detroit at the right. They caught Detroit at the perfect week this week. I think today they
caught Carolina at the perfect time.
You know, and I think they. I think they're catching Green Bay. If I would have told you, Andrew, when the Saints after they got housed by New England, if I said to you, Andrew, in 4 more weeks, the Saints are going to go to Green Bay and be a 4.5-point favorite. What would you have said?
No, I would have laughed in your face.
You just said, did Aaron Rodgers die? But,
yeah.
But even then, you'd have been like, well, even if Aaron Rodgers isn't injured, it'd still probably be a pick 'em. Like,
yeah.
They're a 4.5.
I would have laughed in your face, and then I would have known you were lying and crazy when you would have subsequently told me that they would have 2 pick 6s for the first time since 2012 with Jonathan Vilma.
And 3 defensive touchdowns.
Yeah.
First time ever, by the way, the Saints.
Wow.
Cut off that damage. Even the Dome Patrol never pulled that off.
Right.
Unbelievable.
So the Saints are a 4.5-point favorite, and it may get higher. You know? Like when we tape with the boys, it may be up it could get to 7. Like it's gonna be the people are just gonna pound the Saints for the gambling degenerates. So So Jim, you predicting 12-4. I like it. I like optimism. It's all rainbows now, man. LSU's winning. Tulane had a hiccup, but they're gonna go to a bowl. It's all rainbows now, baby.
All right, Jim, give us your prediction and player of the game for Packers next week.
Wow. Okay. My prediction on the score. I can see the Saints going 31 points, Green Bay, 14. Player of the game for the Saints. Do you care if it's offense or defense? Or
you do whatever anybody you want. Desires.
Well, because he's playing so well, I'm going to stick with Cam Jordan. I just think he's tearing it up, man. Especially, like you said, Ralph, if their tackles aren't playing well, he's just going to rip up that – rookie, or who's their backup over there?
I don't even know who their backup tackles are. Brett Hudley.
Oh, it's that dude. It's the dude who stepped in. Poor
Brett
dude.
Brett Hudley is the quarterback. I have no idea who. I don't know the Packer depth chart. I don't know who their backup tackles are.
Yeah.
I know they're terrible. I
want to just Cam Jordan. Like we kind of expect him to be good because he's the one guy on this defense that's been good throughout his career. Mm-hmm. But he's got 5 sacks in 5 games. He had his first touchdown. Like, He's having a career year.
He looks so happy to to finally have competence around him. Like he looks genuinely happy on the sideline, and it's not. I mean, I know it's because the Saints are winning and all that, but the Saints have won. You know, he got here in 2011. They won in 2011. They won in 2013. He was really good. He looks radiant on the side. He does. It's cool to see. So, and the Saints are doing poses and all. It's phenomenal. The defense is great. It's great. It's great. And so, Jim, thanks for joining us. We'll have you on again later on, maybe in the offseason. Maybe even if they keep winning, we'll need you for a good luck charm. But, Guy, thanks for joining us. You gave
You're
us
welcome.
More time than we originally said. So, join us. And people find him. He's on TV shows all over the place.
And I teach acting classes in the New Orleans area, the workingactorsstudio.com.
There you go. So if you want to, you got the acting bug, the working, what was it again, Jim?
Theworkingactorsstudio.com.
There you go. So thanks, Jim, for joining us. We appreciate
and
it.
And one other thing. This is back in the 90s when you were still in junior high.
I wish.
There used to be a little magazine called TV Guide. that you would get subscribed to, right? So in the 90s, I opened this TV guide, and inside it's like class rings. Get your favorite fan NFL ring. And I was just a kid, and I was poor, and I had no business buying one, but I bought one. I think it was like $90 for this thing. And it's like a class ring, but it looks like the Saints. I always called it my Super Bowl ring, right? And so Saints finally won. Well, the first two games of this season, I did not wear the ring. The last three games, I wore the ring.
Never take it off.
I've worn the same T-shirt and drank the same beer the last three Saints games.
There you go.
Nice. My Raphael Bush jersey is. I've worn it the last 2 weeks. I've been 2-0 with it. So
I've got the authentic home and away Gleason jerseys. This is before he was a celebrity. This is when he was just a player. So.
Before he became your cousin.
Yeah, before it's like my best. Yeah, it's really my cousin.
All right. So thanks.
Thank you so much, man.
Thanks again, Guy.